This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, universe, and welcome to a special Thursday edition of NHL Midweek. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we have 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Thursday evening. First hour is going to be dedicated to the Winnipeg Jets and the Anaheim Ducks, the series, of course, ending in a disappointing fashion for Winnipeg Jets fans last night, a Game 4 victory for the Anaheim Ducks, resulting in a series sweep. The second hour, we're going to focus on the other series in the NHL, the other seven series that have probably been getting short shrift in and around Winnipeg, for good reason, of course. Gentlemen, let's start with last night's Game 4. You guys were in the press box. I was in my seats last night for the game, and my impression was entering the game, even with the Jets getting the 1-0 lead to start, that there was sort of a feeling of inevitability about what happened last night. My impression was the buzz in the crowd, while significant still, there was just a feeling, an air that when they lost Game 3 in the manner in which they lost Game 3, there's just been some, a little bit of helium has been taken out of them, and they weren't going to be able to overcome that. That was just my impression. How did you guys see the game play out last night? You know, how did you see the action on the ice from the higher up view?
Well, you know, Drew, the atmosphere in the arena is one thing. We can address that first, and then we can speak to that, Ezzy, and then we can talk about the on-ice play. In terms of the atmosphere in the arena, the atmosphere is still incredible. I didn't think it matched the level, at least over the course of the entire game, that Monday's game did. And I do agree with you. I think had the Jets won on Monday, it might have been as crazy. I'm not going to say even crazier, because I don't think you get any crazier than Monday, the anticipation for Monday's game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the crowd was into it. Obviously not as into it maybe in the beginning. They were into it in the beginning. First period a little bit. Second period, especially as the Ducks started to carry the play, I thought they kind of fell out of it. And then, of course, the amazing third period ovation right before the goal off the faceoff. And then the incredible, and you were in the stands, of course, the incredible ovation, standing ovation throughout the entire TV timeout, which leads to momentum and a great scoring chance for, you know, Tobias Enstrom, Matthew Perreault, a couple scoring chances. Overall, the atmosphere was great. Did it reach the levels of Monday? No. Will it ever again? Maybe if they make the second, third, or fourth rounds. But even then, it might not exceed it.
Yeah.
So I still thought it was an amazing performance by the best fans in the league.
Yeah, guys, the atmosphere was really the best atmosphere I've ever seen at a sporting event. And I might be biased because I'm from Winnipeg, but it really was. Monday, as Richie mentioned, was the return of the playoffs to Winnipeg. But yesterday, if it wasn't as loud as it was Monday, it was pretty close to as loud as it was. And, you know, Richie mentioned the Go Jets Go chant, and it was just incredible. But, you know, Drew, back to the on-ice result. Yesterday was probably the most convincing win for the Anaheim Ducks. And sure, I think that Game 3 loss was extremely heartbreaking and discouraging for the Winnipeg Jets. I thought they came out with a certain level of energy, and I think, you know, really you could see after the fourth goal, the Ryan Kessler goal, the wind was really taken out of the sails of the mm-hmm. Winnipeg Jets. And even though a lot of people have pointed out the fact that the Jets were leading most of the series, mm-hmm. I think we could agree that the Anaheim Ducks, especially yesterday, proved that they were the better team, and yeah. I think underrated as far as a number one seed in the Western Conference goes. They might have only been 10 points ahead of the Jets in the standings, but I think we'd all agree that the Anaheim Ducks had a bit of an easy ride towards the end of the regular season with the Pacific Division being so weak. But it was an incredible atmosphere, and you got to give the Winnipeg Jets credit for really keeping this series close the entire time. Every single game was a one-goal game except yesterday's game, which was one goal going into the third
and game
period
one.
And game one.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. So I mean,
they were close. I mean, the scores obviously were closer in game one. To your point, it was the Jets were up by a goal into the third period until late in the game, of course.
Right, and you know, you're talking about a team that has gold medals on it, Stanley Cup rings on it. To me, the Ryan Kessler, Corey Perry line is playing at where we've seen it play many times throughout the season. And this team, I think, is going to be very difficult to beat, regardless of which team it is. And I think, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and their fans deserve tons of credit for having an excellent season. But, you know, you really saw in last night's game how the depth for the Anaheim Ducks came through, and especially on forward. And, you know, I know some of us picked the Jets and some of us picked the Ducks. Nobody picked the sweep.
Three of four picked the Jets.
You're the one who had the Ducks, Richie, so we will give you credit for being able to see the forest through the trees.
Yeah, there's a lot of trees.
There's a lot of trees on Anaheim. A lot of big guys on Anaheim that could be mistaken for trees. It seemed to me yesterday, in terms of the game, it was the least crisp game that the Jets played.
The Jets were not good yesterday. Let's call it as it is. Their passing was terrible. The mix-up of the lines didn't work. I like the idea of the line changes. I like the idea of it. I didn't like the actual lines that they put out there. I thought it was probably done a game too late as well. I mean, you get down 3-0, and that's kind of, you know, you take a shot, sure. But I think a product of poor passing last night was players who were unfamiliar with each other.
Sure.
You know, they don't know where they're going to be. And I think if you're going to go to change the lines, which I was in favor of, I would have reverted back to Ladd, Little, Wheeler. And we're going to talk about the St. Louis Blues later in the show, guys, and they reverted back to some of their lines. The last thing I'd want to do, and again, Palmer's did a great job here. He's probably second in the running for Jack Adams. The last thing I want to do is throw the lines through a blender and a lot of players who haven't played together before out in game four against the really in the top seed in the conference. I mean, I want to go with old reliable, Ladd, Little, Wheeler. I'll take my chances with the rest. They're you know, and then you want to match up. And they were matching up really little against Getzlaff's line all night and on game three as well. You go top line versus top line, see what each of them got.
You know, I agree with you that I thought it was time to mix up the lines, and I also agree with you that I thought Ladd, Little, and Wheeler should have at least, you know, played together for some point of it, besides the power play when they do. I was more surprised that he put the defensive pairings in a blender. You know, I'm trying to think. You know,
well,
you
the have... defense had been so bad though, they hadn't played great. I mean, the team defense wasn't great either, but the defenseman as a whole, Drew, I can see. I'm not going to say I love the pairings.
Yeah,
your point's fair. I mean, Buffalo and Stewart's too aggressive. They're both too aggressive together. Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, which was obviously the cause. I mean, you saw Buffalo.
That was Buffalo and Enstrom on the ice in that one.
Fine, fair point. But I mean, that was, you know, this was a rough playoff series for Dustin Byfuglien.
It was. It wasn't his finest moment. We'll talk about the off-ice stuff. I think he didn't play particularly well at the beginning of the series, Ezzy, and then he tried to make up for it. And it's a product of trying to do too much. But, you know, he made some stupid decisions, to be honest. And as I said, before going into the playoffs, and we said, you know, throughout the series, this guy needs to play. And you look at his ice time last night, and Tyler Myers is playing more than him. I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but, you know, there's too many horses in the barn here. There's not enough time. Even Trouba played 18 minutes yesterday. I know he got undressed. I know he made a stupid decision right before he got undressed. But again, horses need to play, right? And there's like too many of them. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad problem. But I think it is a problem. I mean, how many times can you say that Trouba, Byfuglien, and Myers all played a good game, the same game? I don't even think there's one game.
Yeah, I don't disagree with
your
point.
And they're all very talented players. So, you know, as a whole, I think the series was disappointing. You think about going into the series. I mean, you have Bob McKenzie, different guys picking the Jets to go to the Stanley Cup final here, and then win a game. So, I mean, I look at it, sure, it was a positive season, and of course you have to take solace in that. But let's not say it was a disappointing result. I mean, you say one goal game, say close game, say third period leads all you want. They didn't win a game. And that, to me, is a disappointing result. And you don't know... And we'll talk about more next segment, but you don't know when you're going to get back in this opportunity. I mean, you're playing against the Anaheim Ducks team that obviously wasn't as vulnerable as everybody thought. I thought, including myself, I thought they were vulnerable. And you look at the next series, as the possibility of Calgary, Vancouver, you don't know how it'll line up. You could be playing against Chicago, Minnesota, St. Louis for the next 3 to 4 years if you're fortunate enough to make the playoffs. And who knows what those teams will be like. But the idea is the draw was pretty good.
Well, you know, what surprised me most about the series and about Anaheim's play, and I think that certainly to some degree, I think they felt disrespected coming into the series.
I agree with that.
you know, the area that they had a lot of trouble with, supposedly, or the area of concern, was 5-on-5 play. That's where the Jets had been very good all year. Mm-hmm. And the Ducks had, you know, according to the numbers, the Ducks had struggled in 5-on-5 play. And the thought was, do a good job staying out of the penalty box, which the Jets did for the most part in games 2, 3, and 4. They were more disciplined than they were in game 1. Yeah. You know, the Andrew Ladd penalty in game 2 notwithstanding. But for the, you know, the entirety of the game, they were more disciplined. But, you know, the Ducks took it to the Jets, I thought, 5-on-5, you know, for the majority of the series. I thought they were the better team 5-on-5 for the most part.
There were a few areas which really hurt the Winnipeg Jets, and I think the Winnipeg Jets going into the series might have thought that they had the physical edge, and I think the Anaheim Ducks showed that at times they dictated the physical pace of the game, and I think at times the Winnipeg Jets really got into trouble with the forecheck of the Anaheim Ducks, and that really goes down all three lines. Not just the Getzlaff-Perry line, not just the Kessler line, the Ricard Raquel, Andrew Cogliano, Jakob Silverberg line was really effective in that series, and we saw each one of those players have an impact in the series. Mm-hmm. So I think and you know, the goaltending I thought was not an issue for the Winnipeg Jets. You could say that Freddie Anderson outplayed Andre Pavlik, but at times in every single game, I think Andre Pavlik kept the Winnipeg Jets in it. So I think the intangibles of the Anaheim Ducks having more experience, I think, to me, does matter. I think when you have the Ryan Getzlaffs and the Corey Perrys, the Francois Beauchemins, Beauchemin and Getzlaff had the most playoff experience of the two teams, and you throw in Ryan Kessler, who we know how effective he was in 2011, I think you factor that in, and that plays a role in close games. I think, you know, the fact that the Jets had the lead for much of the series, to me, was a little bit overblown. I mean, you didn't win any of those games.
That's right.
So what does it matter if you had the lead? I mean, I realize it's the first time in history that the Anaheim Ducks were the first team in history that won a series having trailed going into the third period every game. But they have the players that got the key goal. So, again, I'm not taking anything away from the Winnipeg Jets. I'm just saying that I think that factored in. I think, you know, there weren't enough lines contributing for the Winnipeg Jets. And Anaheim Ducks, case in point yesterday, Emerson Edom was playing on the fourth line.
And the fourth line gave him trouble, Ezzy, especially games 3 and 4.
Well, the fourth line was responsible for the game winning, the overtime winner in game 3.
Well, they sustained the pressure.
You know, they got in on the forecheck, and then eventually it came back to Raquel in front.
As he's pointing, you know, talks about that fourth line, and you know what? The addition of even Thomas Fleischmann, a skilled guy, he gives those guys space. Jackman was moving around him. He didn't play in the third period at all in game 3. And Bruce Boudreau trusted him in overtime. Now, I actually heard an interview with Scotty Bowman saying, you got to play guys in overtime who haven't played because you don't know how long it'll last. But Emerson Edom was impressive. I think certainly impressive using his speed. And as he talks about the forecheck, they're very good on the forecheck. And I think, you know, let's talk about the complimentary players of Anaheim, because I don't think anybody in this room gave him enough credit. I mean, sure. Jakob Silverberg was terrific. He was just terrific. I mean, he had a tremendous series. And, you know, Cogliano was very effective in the role that he plays. And that's another thing. You know, everybody on that team knows their role. Ryan Kessler knew his job in games 1 and 2 was to go up against Mark Scheifele's line, shut it down. Scheifele's line didn't do anything those two games, really. If I don't recall if they got any points. And then in games 3 and 4, Kessler's job, you know, the Jets matched Adam Lowry against him for every shift, basically, in both games. And, you know, Adam Lowry's an impressive young player, but Ryan Kessler, I mean, let's be honest, he dominated that matchup.
This is the best Ryan Kessler has looked since the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals, and it's not even a close. I mean,
I agree, and it's a testament to how long the season is and where it really matters, and a 10 to 15 point lead in the division for most of the second half of the year, and they knew where they were going to be putting their weight. And let's be honest here, guys, Getzlaff and Perry can play better than they have. That's a scary part. Getzlaff and Perry could play better. Now, of course, a lot of the Jets could play better, and the Jets certainly could have won a couple of those games. But to Ezzy's point, they didn't. And after a while, it comes a trend. And I realize 3-4 games isn't necessarily a trend, but it's on its way.
But there's something praiseworthy for what Anaheim's doing and a little bit lamentable for how the Jets finished the number of those games.
Well, I mean, the other question is, and I guess we'll talk about it next segment, is does it affect your decision-making on certain players? And I don't know if it affects it maybe, you know, significantly, but I don't think you can completely discount it.
Let's go to break. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Ducks series. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Continuing on our recap, our post-mortem, if you will, of the Jets and the Ducks series. And, of course, we will continue doing this on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon on Saturday on this fine station. We'll look at the probably a more broader picture of the season as a whole on Saturday, focus our attention on the series tonight with our recap. You know, you were asking about the impact that the game the four-game sweep would have on some of the decisions the Jets would have to make.
Well, I don't think it's a four-game sweep, Drew, as much as performance of some of the players that took part in the four-game sweep.
Right. Their performance level in the outcome of the series. So, you know, let's start on a positive note then. Who was your MVP if the Jets had one for the four games that they played? Who was the best Jet player on the ice during the course of the series, to your mind?
I don't know. I don't think anybody really stood out, to be honest. I don't think everybody was terrible by any means, but I don't think anybody stood out as an MVP. I mean, go through the roster, maybe you disagree. But I thought Adam Lowry had a really good first two games, but I mean, he got pretty, his matchup was not favorable in games 3 and 4. So I don't really think there's anybody here who
Position to put a rookie into.
Drew, it doesn't mean that I don't think that he's a good hockey player. But I just don't know if there's any, they didn't win a game, and I don't think there's any player who is stood out more than the rest, to be honest.
Yeah, you could pick out certain players that you thought had a strong four games, but I don't know if you could single out one, Drew. And I'm not saying that it's not a question. I see where you're going with this. Who really was one of the better players? And Richie mentions Adam Lowry, who had a great rookie season, and he had hard assignments all year as the third line center. It's not an easy position, especially to start as the third line center, as opposed to possibly getting eased in as the fourth line center, which Jim Slater was for most of the time, unless he was filling in on the third line. But I think for me, again, Blake Wheeler was someone, as Richie talked about for the last couple of weeks, was someone who really created the most offensively. And I think, you know, even though Mark Scheifele, the offensive numbers weren't there, I thought he at times, even though he was overmatched by Ryan Kessler physically, I thought he created enough offensively. But, you know, again, there was a lot to be desired as far as forwards go. I mean, and on defense, I mean, again, Jacob Trouba I thought was excellent, arguably the best defenseman in the series for the Jets, along with Tyler Myers. A defenseman like Tobias Enstrom struggled against bigger forwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, Corey Perry is a mismatch against Tobias Enstrom. Mm-hmm. Corey Perry is going to be a mismatch for many defensemen, but especially Tobias Enstrom. He just couldn't handle him physically. And I thought at times Tyler Myers wasn't physical enough. The Anaheim Ducks are a heavy team. I think it was undervalued a little bit because there are other teams that we've known over the years because of the success they've had in the playoffs, the LA Kings, the St. Louis Blues. I think the Anaheim Ducks have gone out in the second round, I think, but we've forgotten that this team can hit, and I think Matt Bolesky showed it in Game 3 when he put Adam Partey on his butt.
Yeah. So I think knocked him out of Game 4.
Exactly, I thought Drew Stafford was solid, and you know Drew Stafford was moved up to the top line. I think that said a lot, and that he was moved up to the top line with Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, partly because that line had been struggling to create offense, but Brian Little and Andrew Ladd, I thought, had their best game in Game 3. That's why it was a little puzzling to see them throw the lines in the blender and have Jurij Tolusti and Michael Frolik on the third line there with Adam Lowry. So I think that there were positives coming out of individual players. We talked about Dustin Byfuglien in the first segment. He struggled. And in Game 3, Dustin Byfuglien and Adam Partey were on the ice for the first three goals. And that's one of the reasons why Adam Partey came out of the lineup and Ben Sherratt went in, and they put him with Jacob Trouba, because I think you put the new defenseman coming in with the strongest defenseman. That was what I think Paul Maurice's logic was. Keep Enstrom and Myers together. They've been the top pair. And then Mark Stewart and Dustin Byfuglien, even though, as Richie mentioned, at times they were too over-aggressive in the one game that we saw them, and they ran into problems. But I think, you know, Andrei Pavlik, again, to me, he'd probably be the MVP of the series. I know they didn't win a single game. I thought Andrei Pavlik was excellent, and that includes Game 3 when he let in 5 goals. I think he showed that he kept his team in the game. Most of the games were close. And even yesterday, even though it was 5-2, it was a close game up until, you know, later in the third period.
Well, I think, to your point about Pavlik and his performance, and, you know, I think if you look through the goals that he gave up in the course of the series, you know,
how many of those goals were weak? Not many.
There's one that beat him short side in game one. That game was on a power play.
Game two, you mean?
Well, there was I was talking more of the power play goal that made it. Yeah. That gave Anaheim the 2-goal lead.
There were goals that, you know, you could certainly say yesterday's fourth goal is something you want him to have, and there's goals you could pick out for sure. But at the same time, Drew, how many breakaways did the Ducks have in the series? 5? I don't think they scored in any of them. I mean, 2-on-1, and the Jets were giving up a lot of quality chances too. You know, I thought the chances were pretty even in game 3, but the Ducks really came on there in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of breakaways and different opportunities. So, I mean, I don't think he's to blame any more than anybody else. I know he's easier to blame than anybody else, but I don't think he is more to blame than anyone else. And I think, you know, you're looking at free agents, and you're looking at Stepniak, and you're looking at Stafford and Tulusti and Frolik, and I don't think, frankly, any of those guys were particularly good in the series. I mean, Stepniak has moments. But does that change your willingness to sign those guys? I think it might a tinge, but maybe not too much. And at least they're not going to bring them all back. And then they have the contract. They have, you know, there's cap issues. And based on what Larry Brooks is reporting in the New York Post, the cap is likely to be down to $68 to $69 million.
Sure. Bad changes. Canadian dollar, bad everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be a factor. And we'll break that down over the course of the summer. But, you know, overall, I thought Bruce Boudreau did a nice job. You know, I've questioned his coaching in the playoffs, and I thought, give credit where credit's due. He did a nice job with his team. I thought he stayed very calm. His team stayed very calm.
I thought they had a good game plan. I mean, I think the Ducks' game plan was, you know, was pretty clear from the start, and they didn't deviate from it. You know, put the puck in, go, you talk about, you know, go and punish Toby Enstrom and work the Jets down, you know, below the goal line and below the hash marks. And I thought they did that well all series long.
If you look at the ice time distribution, Bruce Boudreau used his fourth line a little bit more. Yeah. We're only talking about 2 or 3 minutes, but I think that's significant to me. Mm-hmm. That was where the Anaheim Ducks had the advantage. Richie mentioned last segment, Thomas Fleischmann comes in there with Emerson Edom and Tim Jackman, who got the least amount of ice time. Those are good players. I mean, those could be top 6 forwards on weaker teams. And so you're having players like Yuri Sekach. Nate Thompson was injured throughout the entire series. He's a good fourth-line center. He was a good fourth-line center for the Tampa Bay Lightning. To me, that was the difference in this series. And sure, of course, the Jets didn't do a good job of shutting down the Getzlaff-Perry Maroon line, and then the Kessler line outplayed the Scheifele line in every single game, I thought. Maybe with the exception of, I would say, game 2. So,
but they gave Scheifele easy competition in games 3 and 4. I mean, they were lining him up against Ricard Raquel most games, most shifts, as he, or even the fourth line.
That line outplayed them.
And that's the thing. That's the problem, is when Maurice did a good job there getting the matchup that he wanted. I mean, Lowry, Kessler, I'm not sure I love necessarily, but again, what are your options?
With Kessler, sort of pick your poison.
Yeah, that's what are your options. I understand that. But if you're going to get Scheifele away from Kessler, then Scheifele and Wheeler and Stafford for them, you know, for the 3 games, and game 3 especially, you have to be able to put up points. And the coach gives you an opportunity to do that, and you didn't. So it's not Paul Maurice's fault they didn't do that. You put him in a position to succeed, in my opinion, against the Raquel Cogliano and Palmieri line, although Boudreau really does go through the blender in the third period. And they didn't perform. So, you know, young players, and they're certainly going to get another opportunity, but, you know, a little bit disconcerting, I thought, Scheifele's performance, in the sense that truthfully, I mean, I thought Jacob Trouba played a real nice first 2 games as a really solid player, and I thought as a young player it was impressive. And Adam Lowry, I thought, played really nice first 2 games, and he was impressive. Mark Scheifele, out of those 3, those youngsters who were all going to be up for contract after next season, it's still a young guy and all that, but I don't think I noticed him once this series. Well, and that would be something to remember. I don't think something to focus on too much, but I think it's something to note.
Yeah, I think it's something to note, and I think he now knows. I mean, I do think that there's something to be said for getting the experience of this is what it's going to take. You know, the regular season.
I agree with that.
The regular season is a much different animal than the playoffs, and it's a much easier animal because people don't. You know, in the regular season, if it's game 58 and you're playing on a Tuesday night at home against, you know, Florida, it's going to be a lot easier to get into a good opportunity to be noticed. That same game three, you know, against Anaheim in the first round of the playoffs, those guys aren't going to give you an inch. They're going to make you fight tooth and nail and, you know, and lose some teeth and lose some blood to get anything resembling a scoring chance.
I think you make a good point, Drew. Experience is important. And the Jets going in had something like 300 games and the Ducks had 600 games or something like that. And as we talked about last segment, a lot of that's coming from Perry, Getzlaff, Beauchemin, throw in Kessler in there. But to me, I think in this series, Richie, you talk about how the Ducks were kind of the underdog slash favorite, you know, going in the first place team in the Western Conference, but a lot of pundits were picking the Winnipeg Jets. To me, this defense has been underrated. And I think the Winnipeg Jets struggled to create offense at times off of the rush. We said that after game three. And Hampus Lindholm, I know Richie's been a fan of his for a couple of years now. He's been in the league only for a couple of years now, but that top pair of Lindholm and Beauchemin shut down the Ladd, Little, and Frolik line. And then if you want to throw in Stafford yesterday, and then Fowler and Dupre were good, and Clayton Stoner and Sammy Vatanen were good, even though I thought Clayton Stoner, you know, I was thinking maybe they'd go with James Wisniewski, but he didn't even get to play in this series. So the Ducks' defense might not be the best in the league. It's not as good as the Rangers' defense. It's not as good as the St. Louis Blues, Chicago Blackhawks. It's not a top-five defense, but I think what we saw in this series, it's pretty good. It's mobile. They have some guys that can throw the weight around. Stoner and even the Beauchemin's, you know, a little gray in the tooth, he can still throw the weight around. So I think
the Ducks,
this defense was a little underrated, and the Jets had some trouble. I mean, you talk about the Stafford-Scheifele-Wheeler line combined 4 points in four games.
Yeah, that's not going to get it done for the most part.
They struggled big time.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Dustin Byfuglien. We'll talk about Paul Maurice. We'll talk about sticking together. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stick with us on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Just got to stick together as a team and go out there and work. Just got to stick together as a team. As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right. As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right. Nope. As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right. That's why we're a team. As long as we're a team, we're together.
You're listening to quite the team that we have here with Illegal Curve Hockey. This is NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom made mouth guard is a must have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You know, Drew, we always stick together, of course.
Yes.
Illegal Curve.
That's usually because we're attached by jelly. We fight over jelly donuts.
The five of us in Illegal Curve, Remo, who's producing, and of course, Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. To me, I loved what Dustin Byfuglien said after the third game. I had no problem with it. I thought it was hilarious in this sense, Drew. Dustin Byfuglien, we know, doesn't really enjoy talking to the media, right? You'd give that to me?
I would certainly give that to you, yes.
He doesn't like talking to the media, but he was obligated to talk to the media. And I know that brings up all the questions, Richie, or kind of those comments that these guys get paid a lot of money.
Only about $5.2 million.
Right, so these guys get paid a lot of money. They can talk to the media. Okay, granted. I think to me, you know, and Dustin Byfuglien, we'd all agree, didn't have his best series. I'm a huge Buff fan. I've said this all year that I think Buff is the MVP of this team.
I think
I've said it all year.
I think you're being charitable with your kind. He was lousy, but yes.
Oh, in this series, he wasn't good. But to me, throughout the year, I think this past year was the best year he's had with the Winnipeg Jets.
Okay.
So I think when Dustin Byfuglien comes out in front of the assembled media and, you know, he's obviously doing his Marshawn Lynch impression, right?
Yes.
You know, I'm only here because I have to be here. I'm only so I don't get fined, right? That whole thing with the Seattle Seahawks. So to me, Dustin Byfuglien wasn't trying to be disrespectful, or he wasn't trying to, I think, avoid questions. I think he was, as Paul Maurice said afterwards, hopefully Remo can play that clip that Paul Maurice gave to the media about Dustin Byfuglien. I think he was just in a bad mood. He was having a bad day. And I don't think he planned it at all to kind of, you know, avoid questions and repeat himself. I think it comes down to he doesn't like the media, Richie. And really, it's one of those situations where he, I think, lets his play on the ice do the talking. And I realize he struggled, but to me, he's not someone who's going to give you a lot.
Richie?
And I think you can't take it. You can't take it any further than that, Drew. I think you got to look at it like that's just Buff being Buff.
I think saying Buff being Buff at some point in time, especially during the playoffs when you're down 3-0, is a bit of a cop-out. I think you're right with everything you said about why he did it. But I do think that, you know, I think at some point in time, I know he doesn't like to speak to the media and everything else. I think at some point in time, he's obligated to give an answer, and I don't think that was necessary.
If you don't like speaking to the media, you don't want the media attention, why don't you just give the cliche answer that 95% of the players give, and then nobody will talk about it?
Sure. If he had come out and said absolutely nothing of any consequence,
we wouldn't be talking about this.
We wouldn't
be attention on himself. So maybe he didn't have the foresight to know that. But I just thought it was just stupid answers. Like after a while, just leave. I mean,
see to me, Richie, you know, being the one guy who has the journalism background here,
uh-huh.
I actually don't have a problem with players not speaking at all. And I'll tell you why. I think that especially leaders of a team, so your Andrew Ladds, your Mark Stewarts, your Blake Wheelers, the guys that wear the C and the A's, I think they have an obligation as the leaders of the team. But again, Marshawn Lynch, for example, right? You know he's going to screw around with the media. So why go through the charade? For whatever reason, he doesn't like to talk to the media. It might be social anxiety. It might just be part of his persona. You know what I mean? Trying to mm-hmm, be sure. That.
Not everybody's comfortable speaking.
I agree, Ezzy, with you that the captains and alternate captains should speak more often. I don't disagree with that at all. But once in a while, those guys need a break.
And exactly. And we
want to hear a different voice. Again, I might not say anything. They hardly ever say anything. But just, again, if he had said nothing, we wouldn't even be talking about this right now. And then Paul Maurice goes out and says a bunch of things. I don't really know why he said any of them. But I know he's trying to defend the Bufflin, but it was just kind of odd statements by Paul Maurice about you have the quotes there, Drew. I don't know what he was getting at all. Maybe it's because the national media was here and a little bit more critical than the Winnipeg media. Maybe that played a factor and he got defensive, but just kind of odd. I thought it was all very odd.
I think it was odd, too, because at the end of the day, you're preparing for game 4, right? The Jets are down 3-0 because Bufflin's comments were after game 3, the day after game 3. So Buff is upset because, as we talked about last segment, Buff didn't play well in Game 3. The deep pairing of Dustin Bufflin and Adam Party wasn't good for the Jets. He's upset. He doesn't want to talk to the media. He wants to focus on winning Game 4, right? So, to me,
clearly the answers didn't help because he wasn't very good in Game 4 either.
And did it become a sideshow? Yes, because in today's day and age, with the amount of media that we have, the media coverage that we have in a Canadian market,
how do you not know that's going to happen, though, Izzy? I know maybe speaking on emotion, but how do you not know that's going to happen? You had the same answer 7 times with national media here. Everybody knows it. I mean, you're in the National Hockey League playoffs. You're in a city that hasn't seen the playoffs in 19 years. There's going to be coverage on the team.
It can't be emotional, because if it's emotional, he's going to speak with an emotional response, which will be something.
I mean, Drew, this could be the way he comes off with his emotions. I don't necessarily think that's true.
You guys know me well enough to know that when I'm in a bad mood, I don't say a lot sometimes too, right? So I'm not saying that Buff doesn't have an obligation to speak to the media, because we do have an expectation of our athletes to speak to the media. And I got to say, Buff has joked around and given answers to the media before. It's not like Buff does this every time. He's not actually Marshawn Lynch, who has a reputation for doing it. I think he was just really upset and did this as kind of a way to avoid questions.
Let's hear what Paul Maurice had to say, some of his comments in response to what Bufflin was saying.
So he doesn't like the fact that he has to speak to the media today. And I'm reading the Twitter pop-ups. Guy makes so much money, he should be happy to stand in front of the media, talk to them. And there's a certain dynamic there between media and some players that you feel that he has the absolute obligation to come out and answer for everything because of the gift and the joy it is to play professional sports and the amount of money that a man would make. And at some point, as a competitive man, he has the right to come out here and say that. I want you to fully appreciate the number of F-bombs that he dropped on you in the back of his brain that didn't come out of a sense of civility that he is. He's a kind and civil and giving man. So the fact.
I don't know what he's talking about there.
I guess he's...
I mean, I know what he's trying to get at, but he, you know, he wants to tell you to where to stick it, and he's holding off, and
so that should be thankful.
Yeah, you should be thankful that you're doing your job, and the guy wants to... The guy wants to get mad at you for asking questions about doing your job because of how he played, and then you should be thankful for that. And I think Paul Maurice goes on to talk about how he feels sometimes like he should. You know what? I mean, go find a different line of work then. Sorry. I don't necessarily... There is an obligation to speak at some point. If you're not going to speak, then you're going to pay the fine. You're going to do whatever the league says that you have to do. I don't know what the exact policies are of the league.
I believe the exact policies are that players are supposed to be available each and every game.
Which they never are.
They never are. I mean, did Bufflin, and I honestly don't know the answer to this, did Bufflin speak after games one or two?
I don't know. We weren't in the room, so I can't speak to that. We could ask people who were.
Yeah.
But in any event, I just saw that Paul Maurice, you know, he tries to defend Dustin Bufflin and overcompensates. What he ought to have said was, Dustin Bufflin's having a bad day. He wants to win as much as anybody. And, you know, he'll be back and ready in form in game four. Instead, he starts talking, kind of lecturing the media almost. And it's just like, I don't know, get off, take a step down there from the pedestal. I thought it was very odd the whole tone of how he says it. And I didn't like it, to be honest.
Yeah, Rich, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but and I think you just mentioned this. I think Paul Maurice is put in a situation to answer questions that he didn't expect. Right? He didn't expect to have to talk about Dustin Bufflin's interviews. Like, you know, you think about it, we're now having interviews about interviews, right? So Paul Maurice, I think, is defending his player. And yeah, sure, did he go to a place, you know, talking about you know, media relations and all this that we really didn't need to go to? Probably. But again, the issue is, if you don't talk to the media, Drew, or if you give them repetitive non-answers, right? Let's call them non-answers. He's actually talking, but he's not saying anything. The problem, and we saw this with Phil Kessel,
sure,
right? Because Phil Kessel refused to talk to the media in Toronto.
Different media markets, right, Ezzy.
But
a lot hotter and tougher in there,
okay,
in Toronto.
But it's still a Canadian market here.
Ten times more in Toronto.
Okay,
the pressure.
Sure.
This is not a tough media market.
Okay, but it's still a Canadian hockey market.
I agree with
that. People want to hear from their athletes, right? My point is that if you don't talk to the media, Richie, or you give those non-answers, people aren't going to like it.
Well, you know, I disagree, Ezzy. First of all, I think Dustin Bufflin has it pretty easy when it comes to his obligations to speak to the media. I mean, he doesn't wear a letter on his jersey or anything, so fine. To your point earlier about those little guys you need to hear from more often, and I agree with you there. So, but I bet you of most of the Jets players in the dressing room, he's probably the least accessible or speaks to the media.
No, there's more guys who don't speak. Tobias Enstrom never speaks.
Well, I mean, I think more people would look to Dustin Bufflin as a tone setter on the team than they would Tobias Enstrom.
And he sets a tone on the ice when he's not a talkative guy. Drew, I don't even care about that. That's all fine. It's just going out there. I actually more of an issue with Paul Maurice's kind of lecture and his tone there than I did even with Dustin Bufflin. I just thought Dustin Bufflin's approach was not well thought out because he drew way more attention to himself than he ought to have, and then Paul Maurice had to overcompensate for it, and I think both of them kind of played it wrong.
Do you think that Bufflin didn't know that he'd get that reaction? Because I have trouble believing, believing he didn't, that he thought that by saying
I personally don't think he thought about it.
I don't think it was premeditated either, Drew. I'm not saying that you don't have a point, though.
PR guy is going out telling him to do that.
No, obviously they're not telling him to do that. I think he came out there and thought it was, maybe he thought it was clever, but I think he knew that he would get a stir out of everybody by just repeating the same comments over and over again.
And we'll never know that, Drew, but your point is, regardless if he planned it, he has to know that there will be consequences. And he's going to bring a negative reaction. And that's, to me, what all of this created. After down 3-0, you created negative energy and negative publicity, if you want to call it that, that really didn't need to be there. Just, as Richie mentioned, answer the questions. And again, to me, either way, I think this was blown out of proportion, and I don't really care. It doesn't change the way I think about Buff at all. But at the end of the day, did it have an impact on Game 4? Well, I don't think it helped at all either.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Ezzy, in terms of I don't think it, you know, it's... This is not something we didn't know in terms of him not wanting to really talk to the media, and I don't think it affects the player that he is. I just thought it was if you don't want attention, don't draw it upon yourself, and if you're Paul Maurice, don't overcompensate for your player's comments, just kind of play it down. I just thought it was poorly played by the organization, drawing more attention than they ought to have, and maybe Paul Maurice's intention was to make himself the story, but I mean, he's kind of done that a few times now, so I don't think people were necessarily playing into it.
It'll be interesting. I think the entire dynamic about the Winnipeg Jets and Dustin Byfuglien this offseason will be one of the more interesting storylines to follow, and that's one that I'm going to be particularly interested in. Let's head to break. When we come back, National Post columnist Scott Stinson is going to join us. He covered the Jets and the Ducks series, both in Anaheim and here in Winnipeg. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the National Post. He's their national columnist, Scott Stinson. Scott, good afternoon, good evening, rather, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Scott obviously brought you on. You were covering the Jets and the Ducks series in Anaheim and in Winnipeg the last couple days, so we're doing our series post-mortem, as it were, so we wanted to have you on to get your opinion on the matters. I want to start with sort of going back to before the series started. A lot of the pundits were predicting the Winnipeg Jets as a potential upset pick. You know, a lot of people looked at the trends between the two teams and thought the Jets might be able to defeat the Anaheim Ducks. Do you feel that the Ducks maybe quietly felt a little disrespected entering into the series?
You know, it's funny because the first couple of days, definitely before the series started, that was a very common theme. You know, people were asking them in the dressing room, do you feel like, you know, you're not getting the respect and everyone's picking Winnipeg as an underdog pick, and what do you think about that? And to be honest with you, the Ducks and their coach and the players, they all kind of shrugged their shoulders. I mean, I don't think anybody gave it too much thought. And for what it's worth, the Jets kept saying, you know, we don't think we're the favorites here. We think we're the underdogs. They're the one seed. We're the eight seed. So I think that all kind of was more of a media storyline than it was something that really bothered the Ducks. But, you know, they were smart enough, if it did bug them, to not say anything about it. So, you know, maybe they used it privately as motivation. But, you know, I think by the time the games unfolded, as we saw, it wasn't that there was a tremendous difference between the two teams. It was just that the Ducks, you know, came out on the top end of a bunch of close games. And in a seven-game series, it's kind of sometimes really neat.
Scott, I saw last night after the game you jokingly tweeted that, you know, now that the Jets have been swept, the crowd has a few months to work on an anti-Kessler chant. Ryan Kessler was obviously excellent in this four-game series, scored the winning goal, had two goals, in fact, last night. Just how impressed were you by Ryan Kessler, and how dominant did you think he was? And is this the best you've seen him play since 2011 when he was in Vancouver?
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, played great in this series, and he's really in the perfect situation for himself because they've obviously got Getzlaff and Perry on their top line, and those guys are great, and they're going to get a lot of attention. So a guy like Kessler gets to go in and be the number two center, you know, and not necessarily have the hardest defensive assignment against him. And there's a lot of talented players on that Anaheim lineup too. So he's got guys that can also score and can do things with the puck. And I think he just, you know, from the very start of that series, he really seemed to have an attitude of he relished the idea of being a villain. Bruce Boudreau would talk about how Kessler was, you know, reveling in it. And I don't know if it was, you know, so much of that was the mental part of it for him, but he really did seem to embrace the role, and it couldn't have worked out, you know, better for him in terms of the villain role than to score the, you know, not just the first dagger, but then the second dagger after the Jets came back to make it a one goal game again. So he kind of delivered the knockout blow twice, which was about the last thing anybody in a Jets jersey at the MTS Center last night wanted to see.
Scott, in terms of, you know, you don't cover the team on a day-to-day basis, so from afar and stepping in for this playoff series, what would you be most encouraged about if you were a fan of the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, they got a lot of young talent. I mean, you can't get away from the fact that this was a team that was sort of sowing its playoff oats to a little bit. And I wonder a little if they, you know, that narrative, the fact that they were kind of playing with house money and their coach had said a few times that, you know, just making the playoffs was a gate you had to pass through and sort of a rite of passage. I wonder if that maybe was said a bit too much in the early going, that kind of even subconsciously got them to thinking like they didn't, you know, really have to win this series. But the truth of the matter is they didn't really have to win the series. They, you know, finally after a big push, they made the playoffs first time since the team's been back in Winnipeg. But they've got so many young guys, whether it's a Jacob Trouba or a Mark Scheifele, or, you know, go on down the line. They have, of course, the young guys who haven't even made the lineup yet, whether it's Nick Ehlers or Nick Tan. You've got all just kinds of, you know, young talent that I think is going to be good for a long time. And I think the interesting thing for this team that I see for next year is, you know, given all these young guys that were in junior this year, you know, what is the makeup of the lineup going to be next year? Who are they going to move out to bring in some of these new guys? Because I don't imagine it's going to be the same group of 25 players back next year. I got to assume there'll be some turnover. But they just seem to have a depth of young talent that I don't think too many other teams in this league do. And aside from that, you know, I was really impressed with Paul Maurice. He is a guy, obviously, I'm based in Toronto, and he was here years ago before I was covering the Leafs to any degree. But I was just really impressed with him as a guy who seemed to, you know, say the right things that I think the players would respond to. But he's also a coach that seemed very open to, you know, learning things. And I haven't heard too many coaches talk about, you know, the quote-unquote analytics with an open mind the way Paul Maurice did. And I tend to come down with, he struck me as somebody that was willing to, you know, take all the information that is available to him and use it to his team's benefit. And I think there just aren't enough coaches that are willing to do that at this day and age. So between the coach and all that young talent, I think there's, you know, I was really impressed with them in terms of having something to build on for the coming years.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is National Post columnist Scott Stinson. And Scott, you just finished talking about Paul Maurice. I want to flip the equation to Ducks head coach Bruce Boudreau. You know, a lot of times in his coaching career, Boudreau has sort of come on the short end of playoff series that a lot of teams or a lot of pundits thought that his team should win. What did you think of Bruce Boudreau's coaching job in this four-game series?
It's tricky to evaluate him only because, you know, they never faced adversity. And the thing that kind of follows Bruce Boudreau around is this idea that once he gets into a tight series, that's when he goes from being a player's coach that everybody loves to being, you know, too stressed, too tight, too, you know, trying too hard to make moves, maybe screwing things up and so on and so forth. So the fact that the Ducks, you know, just rolled off win after win after win, he really hasn't reached that point this season where he's, you know, where we'll see whether this Bruce Boudreau team reacts differently than previous Bruce Boudreau teams. But having said that, you know, he did talk about the adversity of last year, and they lost the seven-game series to the team that would go on to win the Stanley Cup. You know, that probably is a great learning experience in a lot of ways. And so I think that they just all sort of to say the right things in terms of, you know, they have paid their dues, so to speak, and they're not going to get ahead of themselves, and they're going to sort of stay in the moment and, you know, all those various cliches. And so far, it certainly worked for them. I mean, the thing that Boudreau said a couple of times, which I think was pretty telling, was that he knew that this was not a blowout series by any stretch. He said the other day that, you know, they had only led for 10 minutes in that series, and they were up 3-0. So he was quite aware that it wasn't a case where he was rolling out a lineup that was just blowing the Jets off the ice. They were just coming out on the right side of the win, and he was acknowledging that that was a sign that, you know, they still had areas they had to pick up. And ultimately, they played their best game in Game 4, which was really the game that they didn't need to play the best game. So I think he's been pushing some buttons and, you know, has this team figured out. And to sort of circle back to the earlier thing about Kessler, I think having a guy like Kessler makes a huge difference for that team in that it takes pressure off the Getzlaff line. it will preserve them, I think, a bit more as the playoffs go on. And I think it really makes them a dangerous team. If they can get the goaltending, of course, which is such a big factor this time of year, then I think he's got, you know, a lot of tools at his disposal. And I was one of those people that did not think the Anaheim Ducks were necessarily the clear favorite in this series, despite the fact that they were the number one seed in the Western Conference. But I'm more of a believer now than I was previous to that. They're a dangerous team, and if they play like they do, like they did against Winnipeg, they're not going to be mediocre for anybody.
Scott, as you just said, the Ducks were underappreciated by many for finishing first in the Western Conference. Do you think perhaps the fact that Anaheim played a lot of meaningless games and had an easy win of the Pacific Division, that actually helped them? And the players like Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry and Ryan Kesler, they've really saved it up for the playoffs.
I think there's definitely some logic to that. I mean, you look at their numbers, Getzlaff was up there among the points leaders, but Perry was a fair bit back. And I do wonder if to a certain extent they just... Perry also, of course, he was one of the many guys on Anaheim that had mumps. So, you know, maybe part of that was just realizing there was a certain point in the year where they could sort of focus on recovery and health and not have to worry about it. And they spoke earlier in the series about knowing that they had to treat the last couple of weeks of the regular season like the playoffs, and they didn't want to get into the playoffs and have to flick a switch. But having said that, I do think they were able to, you know, balance minutes and not worry in the way that the Jets did. I mean, the reality is, as much as the Jets had a bunch of momentum going into the playoffs, they'd also had a ton of, you know, difficult games and that sort of playoff atmosphere for a month and a half going into the playoffs. And I think when you look back now, you say, well, clearly the team that wasn't struggling every night to make the playoffs is probably going to come into the playoffs having a bit of a health, you know, fitness, tiredness benefit that the Jets weren't able to do. And obviously we heard from Maurice last night that, you know, that they were a bit more banged up than they necessarily wanted to let on. So that was certainly something where I think the Ducks were able to take some obvious benefit from it, just from having a bit of an easy road to the playoffs, and then as a team with some playoff experience, turning it on when it was their opportunity to turn it on.
Scott Stinson is a columnist with the National Post. Scott, we appreciate your time, and thanks very much for joining us this evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the chat.
Take care, Scott. Thanks very much.
Okay. Take care.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with Illegal Curve Hockey. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. Big thanks to Scott Stinson of the National Post for joining us. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Did we see the Zappias on the Jumbotron last night?
Yes.
Really?
I thought we did, yeah.
Yeah, we saw Frank for sure.
Okay.
And we know that he was at the game.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's listening, and, you know, it was nice to see him there.
I'll send him a text message and ask him.
I got to say something, because I know we spent the first three segments and the fourth segment when we were talking with Scott, talking about the Jets, and it was obviously disappointing, but I kind of went on a bit of a, you know, emotional, you know, tweeting spree at the end of the game. You know, talking.
God, are you about to be suspended from the show or something?
No, not at all. Just on the topic of how amazing the two games in Winnipeg were in the whiteout. To me, hearing other visiting journalists, Nick Kotsanika. Of Yahoo Sports, sitting to my left, and, you know, Scott Stinson from Toronto, of course, writes for the National Post, but many others. Roy McGregor was here from the Globe and Mail. Hearing others just talk about the Winnipeg fans, and, you know, we obviously know how amazing the Winnipeg fans are, but to me, even though the Jets lost this series, and again, you know, I'm getting a little bit corny here, but to me, the Jets fans won. Not just the Jets fans that were at the MTS Center, everybody who was watching, you know, everybody who was participating in the whiteout, Richie. The Jets fought hard, got into the playoffs, and had playoff games for their fans for the first time in 19 years, and nobody was disappointed with anything but the result, because the fans gave it their all, and I think the players gave it their all, and it was incredible. The entire hockey world was watching, and I can say without a shadow of a doubt that we have the best fans in the world.
This is Mighty Ducks 4?
being in the seats yesterday, I mean, Game 3 was fantastic. It was something I'll remember for the rest of my life. Being in the seats yesterday was a little bit more subdued, but that chant, or sort of the sequence where the crowd stands up and cheers where they're down 3-1, and they immediately get that goal, it was fantastic. And then the chant through the entire TV timeout. When people sort of seemed they sort of caught on to what was happening, that this chant was going to go for the entire commercial break. I thought that was, and they just got louder and stronger and stronger. That was a seminal moment, I thought. That was absolutely incredible to have experienced that in terms of the Game 4 atmosphere. That was fantastic.
Really, it was. And, Richie, it was reflective of this season. Obviously, the Jets wanted to go to the second round and further. Nobody was happy with just getting to the first round. But I think that this season was a success based on the expectations many had for the Winnipeg Jets in a very tough Central Division and a very tough Western Conference. Sure, maybe some teams in the Central Division didn't do as well as they did last year, but I think the Winnipeg Jets getting to the playoffs was a huge step for this organization. And even though you get swept by the Anaheim Ducks, who we know are a very good team, you took the next step, and you got to think that this is only the beginning.
Not to say that they also might not take a step back, because I would certainly not be surprised, depending on how the offseason shakes out and how the teams around them do in terms of addressing some of their needs as well. You know, I don't think that it's necessarily there's necessarily a bullet or a rocket attached to the Jets, and it's pointing upwards. There could be a step back, like we saw with Colorado and Dallas this year, who made the playoffs. You know, last year, this year they struggled, didn't make the playoffs. Not saying that isn't also a possibility for the Jets.
Sure, that's possible, but I think for this franchise to get into the playoffs, for the fans to go through the whiteout, for the guys like Adam Lowry, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, the young guys, even some other players, veteran players that hadn't been in the playoffs before. Andre Pavlik had never been in an NHL series before. I think that's very important. It's significant. And I think it is something that's important. I know that, you know, some people think experience doesn't matter. To me, Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry having that experience, throwing Kessler there, throwing some of the veterans, Richie, to me that does have an impact on the series, and especially when you're talking about close games.
Their experience matters. We'll move on to the other divisions, I mean other teams and all that, but their experience matters, Ezzy, but Byfuglien, Ladd, those guys have all been there too. Talent matters also. Those guys are just better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, those guys have won the cup too. Ladd's got two cups. Byfuglien has one. Getzlaf and Perry each have won.
But this organization as a whole, Byfuglien and Ladd, haven't been in the playoffs with the Jets.
No, I appreciate that.
This is the first time.
I appreciate that.
You know, that was back in 2009.
I appreciate that. But remember, when Getzlaf and Perry won the cup, they were third, fourth line guys. And Kessler, his team came up short in the seventh game, 4-0. So,
They've won two gold medals, which is probably the equivalent of winning the Stanley Cup.
Three, World Junior.
Sure, fine.
It's true. Yeah.
That's fine. I don't put that on the same level, but I appreciate that you do there, and we can go with that. Let's shift our focus to some of the ongoing playoff series, because really, I mean, I'll be honest with you guys, I haven't been able to keep as close of an eye on the playoffs as a whole with being so focused on the Jets and the Ducks series. It will start with what's going to take place in Vancouver later on tonight. That's Game 5 in the Flames and the Canucks series. The Flames have a 3-1 lead over Vancouver. Ryan Miller gets the start and goal for the Vancouver Canucks in this game. Yeah, so that was going to be my first question. Yeah. Is the right choice in your mind?
Yeah, you know, Eddie Lack took him here, and he played real nice down the stretch, and he's certainly a good goaltender, but he struggled. And it's time for the switch. They lent a really weak goal to TJ Brody last game. I thought they made the switch. Last game, Miller was solid in relief, and I think down 3-1, you gave Lack a good opportunity there, and he didn't necessarily play his best. You still put him in there, and I don't have an issue with that at all. But now it's Ryan Miller. Ryan Miller is just as good as Eddie Lack, and he is a veteran, and you are down 3-1 now. So I don't have an issue with that. I feel better about it also that you've seen Miller play, and he played, you know, he didn't play a full game, but he played a bit, and he was confident. So certainly it would help to have Brad Richardson in the lineup, and the injuries they have, obviously losing Burrows is huge. But Calgary, boy, I mean, they just keep going. And
you know, I know Sedin's talking about, you know, out-chancing them and all that, but again, up 3-1, and the pace that they play with Ezzy and Michael Furland, I mean, it's been just an amazing story. I was talking to my cousin out in Calgary saying that the ticket's almost as hot as a Jets ticket right now. Like, that's the city's that much behind them, and then they see they're a game away from playing Anaheim in the second, you know. It's just a great environment. It's a great environment there, and you cannot hope for them. I got to be honest. Negative there, but.
No, I think you're right, Richie, and I think we all thought that this was going to be a close series. I think some of us picked Calgary, some of us picked Vancouver, but I think we all picked this series to go in 6 or 7 games, if I remember correctly. I picked Calgary in 7. I remember that. To me, Calgary got the best first-round matchup they could have asked for, Richie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the Vancouver Canucks were a very inconsistent team and in a very inconsistent division, a very weak division, the Pacific Division, arguably the weakest division in the entire league.
For sure.
With Anaheim really not having much competition for first right there. And to me, the Vancouver Canucks, again, you know, they're not scoring quite enough on the Calgary Flames. To me, the story with the Calgary Flames, because the Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Yuri Hudler line hasn't been lights out.
It's been outplayed, yeah.
They had a good game last game.
They have 0 points 5-on-5.
Yep,
that line has 0 points 5-on-5, but they have 3 goals and 7 points on the power play.
Still counts as far as I remember.
Yeah, it still counts as far as I remember, too.
Right, and Yuri Hudler got his first 2 points of the series last game in Game 4, and Johnny Gaudreau got his first goal. To me, the story continues to be the contributions from the defense. And Mark Giordano, their captain, mm-hmm. is obviously out. We know that, and he's not going to be back for this playoff series, and most likely not the next couple of playoff series at least. And so you look at the defense, and to me, Chris Russell, really impressive, Alberta boy. Dennis Weidman's very good. Uh-huh. TJ Brody played with Mark Giordano all season, has taken over the leadership role of Mark Giordano.
He's playing his fifth NHL, he's played 5 career NHL games, and that's Sam Bennett.
Yep.
I mean, how good has Sam Bennett been in this
awesome.
Series?
Sam Bennett's been good, and they were prepared to use Sam Bennett this year before he got that injury, and then he went back to junior. But to me, the Calgary Flames, even though, sure, you might say, that Richie, that they're a bit top-heavy, but, you know, they're getting some contributions from other players, and, you know, the top line had their best game last game, as I mentioned, and they're getting better goaltending. Hey, Eddie Lack hasn't been good, and I like Eddie Lack. I'm a big Eddie Lack fan.
Yeah,
you know, I liked him when he was with the Manitoba Moose, but he doesn't have any NHL playoff experience. Now they got to go to the guy that really has the opportunity to turn the series around. It's going to be tough for them to come back down 3-1, but Ryan Miller's done it before with Buffalo. He didn't do very well with St. Louis last year. But to me, the Vancouver Canucks, it's a team right now that's not playing very well. Mm-hmm. And the Calgary Flames, got to give them credit. They work hard. They forecheck to death. They're well-coached with Bob Hartley and Marty Jelena there. And, you know, looks like they're going to get to the second round.
They're also very distracted, Vancouver is, by Calgary's physicality and by Furland. Like, they're mm-hmm. losing
Furland's
their
composure.
Furland's
in their head.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about Vancouver, you know, Vancouver's goaltending and everything else all we want. They've scored in the 3 games they've lost, they've scored 4 goals.
Well, I mean, is that shocking?
No, I mean, they're not a great offensive team to begin with. But, I mean, you know, you're not going to win. You've
Calgary
averaged,
doesn't have that much dominant offense either, but yeah.
No, but, I mean, look, Vancouver's averaging 2 goals a game, and I think 4 of those goals came in 1 game.
Yeah, they did.
So their offense, you know, Vancouver's offense, which, you know, we thought was intermittent at best in the course of the year, has dried up now.
You mentioned Michael Furland.
Yeah.
Swan River, Manitoba, mm-hmm. former Brandon Wheat King. 5 points during the regular season. This is his first NHL playoff experience. You know, give the guy credit.
Oh, for sure.
Really, only playing because Lance Boma's out of the lineup.
Yeah, Lance Boma, a guy who had a good season and he hasn't played. You're right, Drew. But, you know, give him credit. These guys are you can tell that Bob Hartley, you know, similar to Paul Maurice, but he's got these guys believing that you don't have the skill. We don't have the Daniel, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have the Sedins. Given that, you know, Sean Monahan, I think right now is, and Johnny Gaudreau and Yuri Hudler, they're outplaying the Sedins. I think that's what it comes down to. They're outplaying the 2 best players on the Vancouver Canucks. I think Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin are right now not able to match what that line has done, at least in the last game. And really, they're a one-line team at this point. Sure, they've got some...
They're
some,
kind of both one-line teams, and the Sedins outplayed them the first few games, as I thought. Didn't put up points, though. I mean, at the end of the day, what matters?
Right, because that's their game, and I think that you know, the Calgary Flames, we talked about Michael Furland, and they've got some guys like Matt Stajan who provide the leadership role and all that. But right now, at this time of the year, you got to get the goaltending. Maybe Ryan Miller can get them back into the series, but we know it's tough to come down. Come back from three games down.
Game five of that series goes tonight at 9 p.m. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue our look at the other first-round playoff series. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
18 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Also, the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve Overtime Pool. Any playoff game that goes to overtime, tweet at us at Illegal Curve and give us the one player you think is going to win. Use hashtag ICOTPool and you'll win some great prizes, or possibly could win some great prizes from our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Did you have Ricard Raquel on, Drew, or what?
I did not, but somebody did. I can look up his name, in fact, right now, and he won some. He won a great prize to. He's going to check out Rumors on Saturday night to see the comedian. The comedian on Saturday night, I have it right.
Raquel
here,
Welsh fact,
is Bobby Slayton is at Rumors this week, so you can check it out. I believe who was it? Was it Matt or was it Claude that won with Ricard Raquel?
Matt or Claude?
Claude. Claude won with Ricard Raquel overtime selection.
Yeah, a couple things. First off, I'm really happy to hear that Tom Arnold's going to be playing
at
Rumors.
Tom Arnold coming back, absolutely.
Very funny guy. I'm hopefully going to check that out.
On the best M sports show, period.
And, you know, it's, you know, on the topic of, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs and everything. Did you stay up for the Triple OT game on Tuesday night?
Are you kidding me? I was asleep before the regulation was over.
I watched that entire game. And
I don't know how you did watch the entire game.
I wanted to go to bed.
We were
out
very late the night before.
Yeah, we were out till 2 a.m. on the Monday, Ezzy. So that was pretty impressive on your part that you were able to store. Or, I mean, I don't know if it was impressive or sort of crazy.
No, well, the reason why I watched it, that was the best game I've seen so far in the playoffs. And to me, Chicago right now is playing at the highest level of any team.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion. I think you watch the game. Duncan Keith, to me, really took over that game on defense. We know how good the Jonathan Toews, Marian Hossa line is. Patrick Kane starting to get going. They've got so much depth there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Brent Seabrook, you know, you remember the big goal he scored a few years back when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup. To me, that series, you know, Nashville played very well. Guys like Colin Wilson and Craig Smith, you know,
let me ask you a question.
I couldn't stop watching it.
That game started at, I think, 8:30 or something on Tuesday night. I think it was a late game, like a couple of the Jets games have been. Did you take a nap before that game started? That might explain why you were up and able to see the triple overtime.
No, I did not take a nap, Drew, and I actually wasn't that tired at work. I think my body's getting used to the first round of the playoffs when you get less sleep. So,
well, your body is Wonderland.
It's a great game. Chicago and Nashville, just a tremendous series. I know Nashville's backs are against the wall there, but
we're going to talk about that series next time. We might as well do it right now. The Blackhawks and the Predators, you mentioned the Blackhawks have a 3-1 lead. Brent Seabrook with the overtime winner in triple overtime on Tuesday night.
He scores a lot of big goals, as Brent Seabrook.
He does.
Yeah, he does score a lot of big goals. I mean, can you see the Predators coming back from 3-1 down? They got game five later on tonight as well, back in Music City.
Well, Richie, if they have Shea Weber, maybe.
They don't have Shea Weber, though. They don't
have
Shea Weber.
I don't think they can come back.
Without Mike Fisher now in the lineup.
I think this Chicago Blackhawks team, you asked us a month ago about the Chicago Blackhawks. We might have been worried about them getting out of the first round, Richie. But now that Patrick Kane is back and they're relatively healthy, and Antoine Vermette's back in the lineup, he's starting to contribute. This team's dangerous. If I'm the Anaheim Ducks, I'm not scared of the Calgary Flames. All due respect to Calgary, I think the Calgary Flames have gone on a nice run here. To me, if I'm the Anaheim Ducks, I'm already looking ahead and thinking, in the Western Conference Final, I'm probably playing Chicago.
It seems like
Minnesota, St. Louis.
Chicago's better than both of those teams.
I don't disagree with you. The Nashville-Chicago series, though, has been close. I mean, it could go either way, really.
The only problem, Richie, sorry to cut you off there, the only thing to me is Scott Darling. He's been playing well.
Yeah, he has.
But can he keep that going? Because this is his first NHL playoff experience.
The Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup twice with goaltenders who really didn't have a ton of experience going into those playoffs. I mean, who was Antti Niemi? Who was Corey Crawford when they both won the Cup those years? I don't really see any reason why Scott Darling can't follow in those guys' footsteps.
it's just a question mark to me. That's the only thing that, that holds me back from being completely confident because, yeah, Richie's right. St. Louis and Minnesota right now, series is tied 2-2. Both of those teams, I think, will give Chicago a run for the money. But to me, the elite players on Chicago and after Taves, after Hossa, after Kane, after Sharp, after Keith, you've got Brandon Saad. Had a career year, a pretty underrated year.
Yeah,
you've got Antoine Vermette. You've got Brian Bickle. You've got Andrew Shaw. Teuvo Teravainen is even playing right now.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good player. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, I think Marcus Kruger's an underrated player. The defense, you know, you don't hear a lot about some of these guys. Kimmo Tiimonen is now a third-pairing defenseman. He's actually been doing not bad. I think Michael Roosevelt is paired up with Duncan Keith right now. He's started to elevate his game. It's a very deep team.
Let's move on to the Montreal-Ottawa series, where Montreal has a 3-1 lead on the Ottawa Senators after Ottawa won 1-0 last night. Craig Anderson with the shutout. He's been great since he's played games 3 and 4 as Ottawa's starting goalie. Made 75 of 77 saves on the shots that he's faced. 3-1 though for the Habs. Is this, to your mind, is this still probably going to end relatively soon?
You don't know. I mean, about 4-1 goal games, Drew, and you look at the goal. Well, the one that Craig Anderson wants back is that Dale Weiss shot on the off wing.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, as you mentioned, I know Weiss scored earlier in that game, but he's been very good.
That was the overtime winner in game 3.
Yeah, and Dave Cameron, he just pushes all the right buttons. He totally has the pulse of that team down pat. And, you know, okay, you say they lost game 3, but I mean, Anderson was very good in game 3. I thought he went to him at the right time, a veteran who wants to help his squad. I don't think it's over just yet, just because the games are so close, the margin of error is so close, and Ottawa's going to get a lot of confidence from that goal.
You mentioned going to Anderson at the right time. You can sort of contrast that with Willie Desjardins in Vancouver. Both rookie coaches, maybe Desjardins was a little bit stayed a little bit too long with Lack as opposed to Glenn Miller.
Fair, but they're both going to their veteran guy, but they're back against the wall.
Right.
So, you know, I think Drew, that Ottawa is just, I mean, the teams are kind of similar in the sense that Carlson, Subban, you know, getting really good net mining. Well, of course, Hammond struggled, but getting good net mining, Price has been very good. And, you know, their lines that they have, they're not the most dynamic, but they have skill. Montreal's the better skating squad. But Ottawa's a good team. They can move too. And I think kind of the distraction, I think as what happened was the distraction of Stone and the slashing. They got a little bit too into that stuff. And obviously they had the emotion of losing a coach and a close friend. And I think when they were put back in a position of, you're kind of out of it, when they were put back into the familiar position of back against the wall, no pressure, they come out and have a good performance yesterday. I didn't see a ton of the game, of course, because we were going to the game here. So based on what I had heard, but the games that I watched, very close. I don't see any reason why they couldn't push it back to Ottawa.
Yeah, and you mentioned the one goal games, and you know Mike Hoffman gets the biggest goal of his career in game 4, and he had an excellent year. I think he had 26-27 goals in his rookie year. And you know, Richie mentions Dave Cameron, and the Ottawa Senators have been the best story, and Andrew Hammond isn't part of that story right now, but Craig Anderson, give him credit, even though Dale Weiss's goal was a tough one and he maybe should have stopped it. No, he definitely should have stopped it. He's played well, as you mentioned, stopping almost all of the shots that he's faced. So the Ottawa Senators, it's going to be tough to go back into Montreal. But to me, a player that when I've watched the series, and we've obviously been focusing on the Jets and Ducks, but to me, Erik Karlsson has elevated his game to the status of when he won the Norris Trophy a couple years back. He has really outplayed P.K. Subban at times. I think P.K. Subban in Montreal was better, but I think when the series shifted back to Ottawa, Erik Karlsson, the way he can move the puck and create offense from the backhand, Richie, is unparalleled. There's only a few defensemen that can do it. You know, Erik Karlsson, to me, sometimes defensively, he leaves a little bit to be desired. He's not a prototypical shutdown defenseman. But the way he skates, I mean, it sometimes it reminds me of Scott Niedermeyer, who, by the way, I saw down in the dressing room after the game, Ducks assistant coach.
You didn't accost him, did you?
No, I mean.
What about the hit on Boyu? Like, the guy's 160 pounds soaking wet and just lays out Boyu in his own zone. I mean, in the offensive zone.
That's what a captain's got to do, right?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought, oh, you know, he has, as you're a good point, he's been terrific. Been the leader there. They really have to feel comfortable with him being the leader, you know, taking that kind of torch from Daniel Alfredsson and feeling comfortable with it. you're seeing as two defensemen who are as good as it gets, especially in playoffs. They both just up their game. So that's a fun series. The atmosphere is great. Obviously, you have Montreal, but something tells me that's going to go back to Ottawa.
And you got
to
give, you know, aside from Erik Karlsson, you've got to give, you know, some other defensemen, Mark Borowiecki and guys like Cody Ceci. You know, you got to give some of these, you know, depth defensemen for the Ottawa Senators credit. Mm-hmm. Patrick Wierkoch. You know, they've shut down the Montreal Canadiens pretty nicely here. And even though they're down 3-1, nobody's really, for Montreal, I mean, like Brandon Gallagher doesn't have a goal. Alex Galchenyuk only has one goal. Max Pacioretty's played well, but it's not like anybody has four or five goals in the series mm-hmm. so far. So to me, you got to give credit to the Ottawa Senators, you know, D group being a little bit underrated.
Yeah, I mean, some of these games, you know, you got 2-1 Washington right now, 1-0 Detroit. Can we get some scoring here, for God's sake?
Well,
Ottawa. Can somebody score a goal?
All these playoff games, the best playoff game, I think, I mean, I didn't watch the Chicago-Nashville. And game three.
I guess that one would have been
I mean, I didn't see Chicago-Nashville, so I can't speak to that.
And game one in that series also.
Yeah, game one in that series where there was a 3-0 early lead and they came back. But you're right. I mean, which is just sort of speaks to what the entire season in the NHL was about, was the lack of goal scoring. And it just seems to continue, you know, throughout the playoffs. You're right. 1-0, 2-1. I mean, these scores are low scoring and they aren't always dull, but there's... Have any of these games really?
Let's go to Vegas.
Let's go to Vegas. Add more players, right?
More players.
More teams. More bad ice in July and you know, playing the cup finals in June in Las Vegas. Ice is great there that time of year. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Seven 7:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards, for locations, hours, and more. Check them out online at royalsports.me. It's the Tampa Bay-Detroit series. We'll talk about that because there's a game going on right now. Detroit now has a 2-0 lead on Tampa Bay, and given that Tampa's really had struggles scoring in this series, hard to believe considering they're the highest scoring team in the NHL in the regular season, it doesn't look good for them. And Ben Bishop just gave up one of the worst goals you're going to see a goalie give up in the regular season or in the playoffs. It's hard to describe it. He sort of batted the puck up into the air himself and then knocked it out of the air into his own net. Very bizarre goings on between the Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So let's talk about that series. Coming into the playoffs, that was the sort of series that I thought had the cleanest line of demarcation. I thought Tampa Bay was that much better than the Detroit Red Wings, and I'm certainly been proven wrong so far.
Wouldn't be the first time.
It certainly wouldn't be the first time I've been proven wrong.
You know, I'm not going to say, you know, I thought Tampa would win too, and the series is not over by any means. But they're not able to create a lot of offense right now, and that's the biggest problem. I mean, they've been able to create chances, but they haven't been able to produce on those chances, and Ben Bishop here obviously has been struggling, but especially that goal that you mentioned. But overall, you know, Stamkos, as if you're going to say Stamkos isn't getting going, and people talk about whether he's hurt or not, whatever it is, they're getting, you watch Tyler Johnson, they have lots of chances. I know they went off and scored a bunch of goals in game two, and they had a lot of chances in game one. But Mike Babcock said it about 2 years ago. I don't care about having the puck on net and chances. I want to win. It's like when Nashville, they outchanced Nashville, I believe, and then Nashville won before. I think Nashville played Vancouver, if I recall correctly. But he did this whole talk, and I totally agreed with him. I mean, you can talk all you want about the process, but at some point, you got to produce.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like John Cooper's a little bit arrogant about that. He's got a little bit of that Dallas Eakins air about him in terms of, I mean, you guys might disagree, but about, you know, oh, we did this, and sure, it's to try and reassure his squad, but at some point, you know, you have to answer the bell. And they got swept last year 4 games, and I know Ben Bishop was hurt. He certainly hasn't been great in this series so far. I know he was hurt, but 4 games, and then now you're down 2-1 here. You could be down 3-1. That's 7 out of 8 in the playoffs against the Habs and the Wings. Not exactly the 76 Habs, put it that way, so...
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about this series here, and Richie, you mentioned that the Tampa Bay Lightning are having trouble creating offense, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, going into the series, Peter Mrazek, you know, being the number one goaltender, even though he's been good in the AHL and he's been good for the Detroit Red Wings in the regular season. I believe he beat the Jets in Winnipeg this year. You know, he's played well, and you know, Steven Stamkos has yet to score a goal. And
two assists in the first three games of the series.
Yeah, and you're talking about one of the best goal scorers in the league, and they've been having chances. To me, the Detroit Red Wings are underappreciated a little bit for how much depth they have at forward, and Justin Abdelkader missed the first two games, but he played last game, and he's got another assist here tonight, and you know, he's been incredible. To me, he was
a good player.
Very good during the season, playing with Henrik Zetterberg there on the top line, and you know, the Red Wings had that playoff experience last year, and it's a relatively unchanged team from last year. You know, of course, Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk are the veterans at the top. Guys like Thomas Tatar and Gustav Nyquist, I mean, these are good players. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, they're struggling to create offense. And
I think they're too fancy, Izzy. I think they try and make the pretty goal a little bit too much. Put the puck on net, go to the net a little bit more.
Well, they don't have a team that's really built for crashing the net. They're a skill team much more than they are a burly team.
So is Detroit, though.
Yeah, I mean, Detroit is...
So, right, Izzy, like, if you look at their defense, Detroit's defense, you can get in there. Maybe you're not a team that goes to the net, but you can go to the net on that team. Not like you're playing against a bunch of bruising defenders.
Right, and we talked about it before the series started when we were previewing the playoffs. I mean, these are two very similar teams. Mm-hmm. Really quick, off the rush. You know, defensively, I'd give the edge to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think Detroit Red Wings' Cronwall is an excellent defenseman. But I think, you know, the addition, a guy like Braden Coburn hasn't had a very good series to date. But Victor Hedman last year was his coming out party offensively, and he's a good defenseman. Anton Strahlman, I think, has been really good paired up with Victor Hedman. But again, you know, Richie mentioned you got to produce. And the difference to me, why I picked the Tampa Bay Lightning to win, I think it was in six games, if I remember correctly. To me, the game breakers were there for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but the Tyler Johnsons, the Stamkoses, we talked about it. They haven't been getting the job done, and you know, down 2-0 here in Game Four. If you go down 3-1, you know, we again, not many teams do that. You know, you go back to Tampa Bay. Sure, you've got home ice, but this Detroit Red Wings team right now is playing very well, and they've been good all year. I mean, it's not like the Detroit Red Wings just barely clawed into the playoffs. Detroit Red Wings were right in the middle of the pack of that Eastern Conference the whole year.
No, and they struggled at the end of the year, and it took them to the last game of the regular season to get in. But, I mean, do you buy the argument? Do you think something's wrong with Stamkos?
I don't know. Stop with all the excuses and just play.
Fair enough. Let me ask you guys this question. It's not so much about what's going on in the series right now, but Jonathan Drouin's a healthy scratch.
Yeah, but Drew, we talked about it on the air. If you listened to the show before, I hope you've listened, Drew, because you're on the air. But
I listen.
Jonathan Drouin, yeah, I mean, people, you know, they top three pick, top four pick, big time guy. I'm not so sure he's held in as high a regard as some people think, especially in his own organization. Put it that way.
He's 20 years old. I mean, you can't write a 20-year-old off.
I'm not writing him off. I'm just saying I don't know if Tampa Bay is as enamored with him as maybe some think. Put it that way.
Well, maybe you've talked to someone I haven't, but I'm not saying Jonathan Drouin's my favorite player, but he certainly struggled quite a bit this year during the regular season. I think he had four goals. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's maybe, you know, he's been out of junior for long enough now that you're sort of wondering, is he going to become...
Well, he's been out of junior for not that long. He's 20.
I know, but I mean, you're sort of wondering if he's going to become the player that everyone sort of thought he was going
to.
Well,
and that remains to be seen, but John Cooper doesn't have the confidence, and I agree with you, Drew. I mean, Jonathan Drouin, I thought, was going to be playing, and he's not, but again, the young players, and Nikola Ehlers might face this in the NHL. I'm not saying that he won't put up better offensive numbers, but the NHL is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I agree with
you. You've got to play responsibly defensively. You're playing against bigger players.
That's right.
And you're asked to play a role that you weren't played in junior. In junior, with the Halifax Mooseheads, Jonathan Drouin did everything. Sure. You need a goal, Jonathan Drouin's going to get you the goal. Now, he's not the guy that you need to get the goal. He's the guy you need to play kind of the bottom six role, right? So I'm just saying, I mean, he isn't, I guess they've decided that he's not the guy right now to play that role, and maybe they bring him in Game 5, Drew, if they're down 3-1.
Oh, Peter Mraz is just absolutely standing on his head right now. We're watching it here in studio, and he looks great. I mean, Mike Babcock looks like a genius for going with the untested.
I think Drouin's in here tonight. I thought I just saw him on the ice.
I'm pretty sure. Possible.
Maybe I'm wrong. We can check that.
Okay. We'll check that.
In any event, I think, Ezzy, one of the things you talk about playing in a bottom six, top six role, I think that's important. I think also it's, you know, if you're playing with a guy like Brian Boyle, it's different than playing with a guy like Steven Stamkos. If people remember Winnipeg, Jonathan Drouin coming in on the 2-on-1, I think, with Stamkos this year in Winnipeg.
He is playing today. Sorry. Yeah, he's in the lineup unexpectedly.
So that's the skill level that he has, and certainly they know how skilled he is. But I think there's, you know, is it an attitude issue? Is it a conditioning issue? I think some of those things are maturity. I agree with you, Ezzy, as a young guy. But there is a pressure on him. It's always the pressure of where you're drafted, right? So you were drafted before Seth Jones. Seth Jones, defenseman, usually take longer to develop. Seth Jones goes out there. You've watched that series more than anybody, looking very good. So the pressure is then on him to succeed a little bit more than maybe it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, it's nice that he's getting an opportunity here in Game 4. It's a tough situation to be put in on the road, down 2-1 in a series. They're down 2-0 in the game. Yeah. You know, it's going to be a tough task for him. But he's got all the skill in the world. That's why he was drafted that high. He put up the numbers in the QMJHL, and it's taken him a little while to get it going. Not everybody steps in to the NHL and dominates like they did in junior.
Let's talk about the Wild and the Blues series. Yeah. That series tied 2 games apiece after the Blues absolutely dominated the Minnesota Wild last night, a 6-1 win in St. Paul. The two wins that the Blues have been fairly convincing. The two losses the Wild have had have been fairly convincing. So, to no one's surprise, we're back down to a best of three series between these two teams.
Yeah, no surprise there, Drew. It can be a long series, both good teams. Ezzy, the surprise to me is not completely and totally surprised, but I am surprised based on how well he played down the stretch. Maybe he's tired, or maybe it's just that it's kind of not as sizzling as he once was, but Devan Dubnyk has struggled. I mean, you watch some of the goals he's letting in. They're not goals he was letting in 10 games ago.
Got pulled last night.
So yeah, they were bad goals he's letting in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they would go with Darcy Kemper after one bad game.
Yeah.
I don't think he can do that for Game 5, but yeah, not at all surprised, Drew, that this series is a best of three at this point. These are two teams with lots of depth at both positions. I think I'd give the Blues the advantage on defense, but as far as goaltending and forwards go, pretty close. You know, the way Devan Dubnyk has played, you'd probably give him the advantage over Jake Allen, but he struggled, and this is going to come down to really mistakes, and I bet these games will be a lot closer. I can bet Mike Yo, is going to want to keep these games a lot more low scoring. Knowing that now Devan Dubnyk's struggling a little bit, but
it's funny,
again,
to me,
Vladimir Tarasenko continues to be the story. I mean, guy,
that goal last night,
it's unbelievable, and we talked about it on Saturday. Yeah, I mean, he's got some skill that only a few others, guys like Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby, and among others, have. And you know, he can be that difference maker. We talked about it. He could be that game breaker that the St. Louis Blues haven't had, and that could take them, you know, further, because their intentions aren't to get to the second round or the third round. This team wants to win the cup. You've got a great team there. The goaltending hopefully gets them there, but you know, as far as the skill, and you're talking about a line with Jaden Schwartz and Jori Lehterä there. They've moved Steen, Backes, and Oshie, I believe, together.
They have. I mean, prior to Game 4, I mean, those were the Ken Hitchcock, prior to Game 4, they're down 2-1. He goes with the lines that have sort of brought them this far in the course of the season for the most part. Steen, Backes, and Oshie.
Mm-hmm.
Then the STL line, the St. Louis line, gets back together with Schwartz, Lehterä, Tarasenko, and Paul Stastny's centers between Berglund and Yaskin starting Game 4. It pays off, obviously, with a 6-1 win.
There, Drew. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of talent. There's a reason why they beat the Wild 6-1.
Yeah.
The Wild are a better team than that, but St. Louis Blues, and then you've got, you know, Reeves there and Ott on the fourth line there. I mean, there's a lot of depth. They're going to be a lot of trouble. I think, you know, Chicago has even more depth, but, you know, Minnesota, they got to get back in this series, because that game yesterday, that was a convincing win by the Blues.
A convincing win is an understatement there, obviously, with the 6-1 victory.
I think Schwartz and Tarasenko are their two best forwards, and that's no disrespect whatsoever to the likes of Alexander Steen and David Backes and Oshie.
Well, we've seen Backes and Oshie and sort of their inability to create offense for themselves necessarily all the time. I mean, you know, we saw it against the Jets, and at different times when Tarasenko was out of the lineup, they have trouble. They don't have a game-breaking player. to drive the bus offensively when Tarasenko's out of the lineup.
That's true, Drew. It's the ability to create off the cycle. Sometimes it's not going to happen. Whereas Tarasenko can beat you off the rush. He can beat you off the corner. He's a great shooter. He can make moves both sides of the both ways. Beat your left, beat your right. There's really nothing he can't do offensively. So it's great. It's nice to see a young player really take off, and it's nice to see a young scoring player, because we talk about the lack of offense. Well, there certainly wasn't a lack of offense last night in St. Louis.
Goal he scored, the breakaway goal he scored last night, was just a thing of beauty.
Well, he's had a couple of those at full speed that you think, wow, like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Rangers this year, and he has a couple other goals. It was against somebody else, too. He just has goals that are, you know, otherworldly, and you love to see it, because it's kind of like the old Pavel Bure thing. You don't see those. Never mind, like, the plays, as Andrew. It's not even the plays. It's that the guys don't even try it anymore. I like that he tries.
He says, I'm creative enough and I'm good enough that I can make a move on you and succeed at doing it. Let's go to break. When we come back, we've got a couple more series to look at. We'll give you a score update on what's going on in the games that are underway so far tonight. You're listening to NHL Midweek. One final segment on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Programming note, this is the final NHL Midweek show for this season. We'll be back with NHL Midweek, of course, the start of October when the 2015-16 season kicks off. But the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, that's not going anywhere. We'll be on Saturday, of course, this coming Saturday, 12 noon till 3 o'clock here on TSN 1290.
I got to say, it's a little sad. You know, the Jets season is over, unfortunately. This is the last NHL midweek. What am I going to do with my time now?
We need a break.
I got to say, I'm not that upset about
it. It's not you, it's me, Ezzy.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Nothing, or drink heavily.
Nope. I've signed my sister actually signed me up for a run in 2 weekends, and I'm going to be participating in the marathon relay. So I'm going to be getting
Richie,
in shape.
Richie, you want to take that one yourself?
Well, how many times have we heard this marathon relay thing?
How's that bike you bought?
No, I've. What do you mean? Well, I've never signed up before.
Did she once sign you up for the relay?
No.
What about the bike?
What did she sign you up for? Hold on a second, with the bike. Didn't she sign up for something once?
No.
Didn't you have a train? Were you training for something and then you pulled something? You pulled pork, apparently.
No,
pulled pork sandwich.
I'll be participating in that. So, you know, use some time here to get into better shape. That's my goal.
That's good.
A good goal to have. I look forward to regular updates about your training regimen and how long it takes you to bail out on the marathon relay team on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. Sounds to me.
I'll throw the gauntlet down.
Let's hear.
Throw the gauntlet down there, Ezzy.
About what?
That if you do the relay and you are on the team and participating in the Manitoba Marathon Relay, a great event. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll buy you a nice meal or something. I will say a mea culpa on air, of course.
It's not a question. I'm doing it. And I actually did cross country for 5 years. I've done the marathon relay before, actually.
We got to put something on this.
Okay, I mean, if it means that I lose or I have to buy Ezzy, a nice meal or something along those lines, and he does this event, I think it's money well spent.
You have to buy coffees for the show for a month.
Coffees for the show
for
a month.
You're kind of missing the point here.
Deal.
There we go.
Agreed.
Deal.
You're missing the
point. How did you snore your way into this disagreement?
Well, I'm not doing that because I didn't bring it up for you to.
No.
I'm doing it.
Hold on. I'm with you now. I get free coffees out of this.
Okay.
I will run with you.
Okay. You're definitely not going to run with Ezzy.
Probably not.
Yeah. But Ezzy, if you do it by the
personal training for 8 months. I mean, I'm a slob.
All the power to you.
Like, I mean,
you have trimmed the beard, so you are no longer a slob. About 10 days ago, I think I could certainly make an argument contrary to that. Anyways, let's talk about the score update from around the league right now. Two games underway in the NHL playoffs. As we mentioned, the Detroit Red Wings up 2-0 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's in the second intermission. And in Washington, game 5 between the Islanders and the Capitals. The Capitals have a 2-1 lead. That's also in the second intermission. Let's talk about that series because we haven't spoken about that so far.
Well, it's been a good series. And I'll tell you, Drew, you know, it's been a back and forth one. Even in game, really, I mean, the Islanders have, controlled the series. I think Washington's controlled a little bit more than the Islanders. I've watched a lot of that series. Goes without saying, huge goal, obviously, by Washington in overtime. But, their best players have been their best players. My concern of secondary offense has been a factor. They got a nice goal here in the second period that Halak almost was covering, Ezzy. And Halak's been good. The Islanders need their secondary scoring to pick it up here. That surprises me a bit. And
get a bit of a boost. Lubomir Vishnovsky, Mikhail Grabovsky returns to the lineup tonight. He hasn't played since February 19th. He's been out with a concussion.
And he looks okay, but Hamonic's a way bigger issue there.
He's been out the whole series.
Yeah, and so, it's very much a coin flip series. Coming down here 2-1 into the third, I think it goes to seven games. I think I thought that from the outset. Both these teams are real good. Both these teams can beat anybody in the East. And I think Washington, if they get through the Islanders here, they're going to give the Rangers a big-time tough battle if they end up facing them. But, wouldn't you guys, and I said it in the preview show, wouldn't you love to see the Islanders and the Rangers? And Tavares, scored the goal in game three there. But
what is it, 15 seconds into overtime?
Yeah, you even expect him to take even another step. I think he's capable of another step. And, Ryan Strome started off all right. And there's a couple guys there I think can be better. Washington's big guns have been good. So I expect Game 7. I wouldn't be shocked at all by Game 7 overtime in that one. And I think it's been a solid coaching job. I don't have a big issue with. I think they're both trying to exploit the other team. I think Washington's doing a real nice job of exploiting, as I said, I think it was on Saturday's show, of exploiting the lack of size in the back end of the Islanders. And as you saw, Tom Wilson, as he blow up Lubomir Vishnovsky, who has concussion problems. And now Tom Wilson fought tonight against Anders Lee. So the Islanders sticking up for one another. You have to like what you see. Tom Wilson's built like a brick house.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, Ezzy. Did you have any problem with the hit that Tom Wilson laid on Lubomir Vishnovsky?
I got to be honest, I didn't see it, so I can't comment on it. I have watched three of these four games, and I agree with Richie. I think that this series is going to seven games. I think really the series has gone back and forth, and Richie mentioned game three, John Tavares gets the overtime winner, and then game four, Nicklas Backstrom, we talked about it on Saturday, Nicklas Backstrom has just been unbelievable. He's been the best player, I think, period, in the series.
Yeah.
And he's known for being a playmaker, not a goal scorer. So I think that, as Richie mentioned, the Tavareses and the Okposos and the Ovechkins, the Backstroms, the best players have been really good. And the goaltending hasn't been the issue. These teams are so close. It's going to go right down to the wire. And Braden Holtby, I think, he missed a game there, and Philip Grubauer had to come in. I think Holtby had the flu.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's come back, and he's been excellent. So you got to give Holtby credit. He played the most games of any goalie in the NHL this year.
He's been excellent. Mitch Korn has done a heck of a job here with him.
Yeah, yep. Goaltending coach for the Washington Capitals. Curtis Glencross acquired at the deadline.
Yeah.
Healthy scratch for a second consecutive game.
A little surprised by that, but they've got other players there that are contributing. And, you've got the difference, too, to me, the Washington Capitals this year, Andrei Burakovsky, Evgeny Kuznetsov, those guys have kind of, added a skill element to this team. They have the Jason Chimeras and the Joel Wards and the Troy Browers who can muck it up. Mm-hmm. The Islanders are having trouble with the Capitals physically. You mentioned the Tom Wilson hit. I haven't seen it, people, it was a little controversial, but
did you have a problem with it, Richie?
No, I didn't. I thought it was a good hit. I don't like to see Vishnovsky with concussion problems go down, but it was a similar hit, I thought, to Bilesky on Party.
But again, caught him coming around the net.
Just quickly, Drew, a difficult situation. Mikhail Grabovsky's come in, and he hasn't played since February, right? And so he comes in, and now they're counting on him for offense. They only scored one goal last game, so they need something out of him.
Yeah.
And then you got Griffin Reinhardt coming in for Vishnovsky, a first-round pick, but somebody who has struggled. So, it's a tough situation. The Islanders, it's going to be tough here. The Caps are playing really well. Again, you need Tavares, Okposo, that line, and some of these other guys that have had limited NHL experience, Brock Nelson, players like this, Anders Lee. So
Caps are real good.
Yeah, Caps are real good. They're going to be certainly a dangerous threat. We didn't quite have enough time to get to the Rangers-Penguins series.
Well, the Penguins are imploding, and I know the Jim Rutherford incident with Rob Rossi there. That was odd that Rob Rossi wrote a first-hand account of something that happened. I don't know if you saw that, Drew.
Well, Dejan Kovacevic called him out for writing about it.
Yeah, I thought like that should be a third party writing about that, not him writing about it, because, of course, he can kind of tint the account as he wants to of what happened. But Evgeny Malkin, guys, injured or not. He's done absolutely nothing. Yeah. And you're not going to win without... you don't have a good enough defense. And hey, they've been in every game. It's been tight games.
Yeah.
But Evgeny Malkin's got to wake up.
2-1, consecutive 2-1 wins for the Rangers, including game four in overtime. They had home to play game five, I think, tomorrow night?
Malkin hasn't scored in 15 games, I believe. I don't think he has 14, a point in nine games.
He's not scored since March 6th against the Anaheim Ducks.
I don't think he has a point in nine games.
I know. He's been atrocious.
You can make that up. I read that over three times today. I'm still pretty sure that can't be true.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk much more about it on Saturday, and of course all the series more talking about on Saturday, and a look back at the entire Jets season on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That'll be at 12 noon. Big thanks to Scott Stinson of the National Post for joining us today on the program, and a big thank you to our sponsors, Royal Sports and Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit the new Knott Auto Corp Luxury Auto and Art Gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. Big thank you to Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to NHL Midweek, the entirety of the season. We're not going anywhere on Saturday, so we'll see you at 12 noon for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Until then, good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.